Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to another episode of Finding You with Marvin Rohn and my co-host, Stan Macklin. We have a wonderful episode for you today, so sit back, relax, let it do what it does, and let the Finding You team work this magic. So today we're going to talk about, we talked last week about, we call it black and brown solidarity and the issues in the Latino community and how we could begin to work together. So we're going to follow that up with part two of that discussion. But first, as always, it is the Empowerment Pledge. And that pledge is I will work on myself. And if you would just begin to think about the process of what you need to do to work on yourself, to liberate yourself from some issue, some concern, some lifestyle, some living condition, any of those things. If you can begin to work on yourself, whether it's your exercise plan, your diet, whatever it is that's going to help build you, then that's what it's all about. And if you can, whether it's your relationship, whether it's time management, any of those things, all you have to do is begin the process of daily working on yourself. And that's what it's all about. Just working on you every day, just one day at a time. I'm taking one day at a time. I'm in control of my feelings, my moods, my emotions, and I'm working to get better. So I love myself more and more every day, and that's what it's all about. That's what we want to do here. We want to help you find yourself. We want to help you get involved with working on yourself to become the best person that you can be. Okay? So strive to work on that. Let things work out for themselves, and you can become a better person just by doing that. And without further delay, it is my good friend and co-host live from the Harrisonburg studio. It's Stan Macklin. Stan, are you available?
Yes, Stan Macklin is in the house. And how are you today?
I'm doing well. Just in one of those places, man, feeling good. I'm just motivated, I'm inspired, and I'm empowered. So, you know, I'm looking forward to today's discussion, and let's get started.
All right. Is Miss Cortez in the house?
I am here.
All right. We had such a wonderful program last week that we felt it was just appropriate to be able to extend it to another week. And your insightful as a Latino young woman is very refreshing, not from the standpoint that there are not other individuals, but it's good to see an individual who happens to be 25 and so insightful concerning some of the realities that exist today. And one of the things we want to really flesh out a little bit more to pick back up on our discussion, we were talking about the dialogue in terms of conversation and working together. And I might even say that amazingly, after that broadcast, we went and we spent some time when Marvin Rohn came into town, and we visited with another Latino brother, and it just was so many insightful confirmations of Daniel Ribeiro. I don't know if you know him.
I do.
Okay. Concerning the importance of black and brown networking together. And, I mean, he even really took some steps to further foster that into reality, to set up some steps of how that can happen. And I just thought that that was such a wonderful confirmation. I'd like to say thank you to you for stirring that conversation, and how just in a matter of moments it came into reality. Would you want to highlight anything about that, Brother Rohn?
Oh yeah, it was an amazing conversation. I would like to start with we had going into a discussion about the Latino perspective in terms of some Latino Americans taking very various stances on race and relations, and we talked about George Zimmerman and his position in the community as it related to Trayvon Martin and that incident. But he said something that was really, really special. He said that he felt that is, and I don't want to paraphrase him and get it wrong, but I'm just getting as close as I can to it, that Trayvon Martin was the image that was created for George Zimmerman, and he wasn't really necessarily at Trayvon to hurt him, but there was an image already created in his mind. And we talked about it on a show last week about how the image is being created for us that keep us in fear and keep us out of dialogue. What do you think about that?
I think it's exactly right. I mean, you know, I think that we talked a lot about I think just different misperceptions of people of color in general, you know, and kind of all the different representations of people in those categories, you know, whether you're gay, whether you're poor, whether, you know, you come from a family of, like, you know, business investors. I mean, I think there's just all kinds of assumptions that are made. You know, I was talking to one of my good friends yesterday who happens to be black and Latino and gay. He's about my age. And, you know, somebody saw him yesterday and he was wearing, you know, some nice, like, professional attire, had a button-up shirt, a tie. And, you know, a white friend of ours said something to him. He was like, oh, this is how you look during the day. And, you know, my friend, he just kind of like blinked at him and didn't really say anything. And then he came over to my house afterwards, you know, and we had this whole conversation where he was just like, you know, that's somebody who I consider a white ally. And, you know, even he notices, right, that I like dress differently, like on my downtime when I'm not working, you know. And then we started having this conversation about, you know, as a large black man, you know, how he gets treated when he goes into department stores, right? You know, within 5 minutes of being in there, he's got people asking him if he needs help, you know, and we were joking. We were just like, Walmart's not the type of place where people ask you if you need help, you know? So I think that I think about, you know, there are examples of that happen every single day. And I think that, you know, I think what happens a lot of times then when we're talking about black and brown solidarity and how to work and build together, one of the things that I think it requires of us as people who are allies with each other from different people of color communities is we do have to have real and frank conversations with people in our own communities about stereotypes that we have of other people of color, right? You know, I feel like I find myself in pretty constant conversation with other Latino people about their misperceptions and stereotypes of black people, right? And so I think that it is a requirement of us, of people who are trying to build those relationships, that we have those conversations with our own people.
Okay. So do you think would be – go ahead, Stan.
No, I just was echoing what you were saying, right, that, and the stereotypes, they do exist. They exist to the extent that they alienate us and when you don't venture, let's say, into other cultures outside of your culture, it can be a hindrance. And I think that once we address the stereotypes, I will really see that these stereotypes, in many instances, are myths that have been conjured up in our minds about other cultures. We don't really get to the real nitty-gritty of get to know one another. And I think that we just rob ourselves when we create the absence of getting to know each other because of the fears that we may have because of the stereotypes. And so I think you hit it right on the head, Melinda. some dead space.
I was like, did we lose somebody? I just heard a beep.
I'm still on.
Yeah, we're still here. I heard it too.
Okay,
so which directions would you suggest that we go in terms of building relationship and fostering a better understanding of both communities as well as culturally?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, so for me, I come out of a very long trajectory, you know, of community organizing and from folks who have been involved in social movements. And, you know, most of my mentorship as a young person had been through elders from various different communities, you know, across race and class and gender and sexuality, who have worked on, you know, social justice issues of a wide variety, and particularly in the South, particularly from Southern movement traditions. You know, and I think that a lot of the social movement work that has happened in the South, you know, over the past 100 years, has been in the vein of what we call both systems change and culture change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a reality that we can't make changes in our communities without confronting systems of power and different policies that fall within those systems and different structures within those systems. We can't actually do better for ourselves and for our communities without confronting that unjust power. And then there's also the reality of having to create and make culture change in and outside of our communities to make those systems change also those things also possible. And so we need to be, I think, as leaders of the community, working on both of those things at the same time. So concretely, I think that in my life, what that has looked like, you know, when I think about systems change and policy change stuff, one of the things that I think is really important is that we show up for other people's fights, right?
Okay.
So that, you know, if somebody in the community that is not of an identity that I have is confronting power in some way, you know, that I'm not going to say, oh, well, that doesn't concern me, right? You know, it's like that thing Ella Baker always said was, who are your people, right? To me, it's my responsibility to say, these are my people. These are the people that I stand with. And, you know, and to show up for other people's fights and then to also have conversations with folks about what that means likewise, right? So I think that's one thing. And I think one of the ways that we get there to be able to build trust to show up for other people's fights is by doing a cultural work and cultural and community and relationship building to make that possible. I think so much of what I've learned, you know, in a very short amount of time in my life is that you can't do any of that work, that work to liberate ourselves as people and all of the various ways that we exist as people without building trust with one another, you know. So I think everything from you know, going to events that other people are having to putting on events with other people that aren't from your communities, you know, I think it's really important that we begin that process of being in spaces together, whether that's publicly, right, or in our homes, of building relationships and trust so that we can show up for each other in our fights. Because if we don't actually have an understanding of what's going on in each other's lives and how we're affected as human beings by all the number of things that we're affected by, then we can't actually come together when we need to. I think that that's really important. So, you know, it's one of the directions that I feel like with young people that I work with, you know, and even with not young people, right, that is one of the things that I feel like I find myself circling around and talking about, but also not just talking about, but trying to practice, right? I feel like one of the other things that is really important is that we aren't just talking about all the things that we should do and that we're actually showing other people what it looks like to live a life that is in solidarity with people who do not share identity traits with you, right? If we're talking about, you know, Dr. King's vision of beloved community, to me, that means that we have to actually act that out and practice out what that looks like, right? Because I think too often people assume that it's just going to happen if we just, you know, think it long enough. And for me, I'm just like, it actually takes practice for us to be in beloved community with each other. And it means we have to be willing to fail. It means we have to be willing to trust each other. It means we have to be willing to mess up. So those are some of the things that I think are really important.
What do you think the major barrier or the greatest barrier that we face in building this trust and the relationship that can be developed by becoming examples for one another?
Mm-hmm. I think in terms of barriers, you know, we can fall back on the – I think we can say that, you know, the stereotypes are one of the biggest barriers, but I want to back it up and I want to say a little bit that, you know, I don't think – you know, I think our different communities have different stereotypes of each other, right? But I also want to say that I don't think that those stereotypes are manifested by ourselves necessarily, right? I think that they are tools of white supremacy and that there have been very real tactics and strategies by groups of people in this country, you know, for a very long time that maintains the status quo and the power that be, whether it's around whiteness or whether it's around people who maintain large amounts of wealth, right? And so to me, white supremacy is one of the major barriers, right? And we have to be able to work through that and to be able to name, you know, we have been strategically pitted against each other, you know, as people. And then I think, you know, I think another barrier is our fear. You know, I think our own individual fear within ourselves that we have of communities that we're not a part of. And I think that's fear around all types of different things, you know. But I know even for myself, you know, I grew up in a pretty white place. There were some Latino people, most of them that I was related to, you know, and there weren't a lot of black people around me. There weren't a lot of Asian people around me. There weren't a lot of people from the Middle East that were around me, you know, geographically where I was at, you know. And so I moved to an urban area where it was much more culturally and ethnically and racially diverse, you know, and I had to get over my own fear in myself of not being able to connect with other human beings to be able to move forward in a way that was genuine, right? And I think that requires you to ask deep questions of yourself as an individual about what you hold valuable and most dear, you know. And I think over time, the vision of building beloved community is something that I do hold dear to my heart, and the liberation of all marginalized and oppressed people. So when I think about how to actually practice that out, I do have to ask myself questions all the time. You know, in my relationships that I have with people, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I have to stop myself and say, am I making an assumption about this person based off of their race, their class, their gender, their sexuality, and how is that harming my ability to connect with them as a person, right? And I think that when we can get into a practice of doing that, it actually allows us to do community work with people. But it's a skill, right? You have to build it up. And I think one of the other things that I feel really deeply, you know, I think especially as somebody who's still pretty young but also works with people, you know, who are younger than I am, is that I think that there's a serious, serious gap across our communities in leadership development of our young people. You know, I mean, I think that as somebody who didn't find any mentors who looked like me in terms of identity, right, you know, I mean, it was, you know, I was 21 before I found another queer woman of color, right, that I could even have a conversation with, one, about what my life was like, and two, about what it means to walk around in the world with that role, you know. And so to me, I'm just like, my life feels like it would have been totally different had I been 14 or 15 and that was a possibility, right? So I think a lot about our young people and a lot about the types of access to mentorship and leadership development that they have, I feel like it's super, super crucial that we're talking to our young people about things like black and brown solidarity, because we know that they're not going to learn those things, you know, especially in a school system or communities where white supremacy is the value that's touted, right? You know, I think we have a responsibility to our communities to invest deeply in that type of work with our young people.
Wow. I think that it's dialogue like this that is profoundly important because it costs us to come across the bridge. When we stay in our own communities, we have a tendency to just live in our reality, and we don't get to know other cultures. And I know that that's very important. I think it's especially when she said showing up for each other's causes and the fight and so forth, because it's easy to isolate yourself and just stay in your own cocoon. But really, to be honest with you, in a sense, we're kind of like in the same boat. And we can float together to make a difference if we're willing to commit ourselves to doing that. And that takes time and necessary to do the necessary steps to make time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's fear in doing that per se because of the myths, the stereotypes, and things like that. But when you come to find out that people are basically people, and there are some issues. I think we all have been affected and influenced by white racism and racist structures, and we have to even monitor ourselves because we can respond out of that context, and that's not healthy. And we don't want to be about that. And I think that when it comes to immigration reform, I know that that's something that can happen, but there are those basically in the political circles that have somehow adopted this step-by-step approach as the way they like to work at that. And it's not necessarily the right way to go about it in terms of establishing a clear pathway to citizenship. But my hat just goes off to all those who worked in so many spheres to make things possible, especially in terms of our migrant farm workers, because it's not necessarily easy what they do, but they do it because of consistent work and for a better opportunity and for their families. And I just know that we take a lot of things for granted as Americans per se. And so I think it's good to have you on the program and your open candor about some of the concerns that we're discussing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that by being able to network together, it's an enhancement, something that we can continue to build off of, and we shouldn't take for granted.
Well, I think it's those bridges that we must continue to build and bridging the gaps in understanding. You mentioned leadership development and mentorship, but it's also the willingness. You know, a lot of us have to be willing to change. And I think a lot of us are not willing to get out of our old places and stand up. I come up with their concept called moving out away from our comfort zones. And a lot of us are in comfort zones that we have to be able to push ourselves away from that, to be open to dialogue, to be open to change, to be open to seeing the world from a different viewpoint or perspective.
Yeah, I think that's right. One of the things that one of my mentors says to me and lots of other people that she mentors all the time is, are we willing to be changed in the service of the work that we do? And I feel like that's something that I carry around with me a lot and that I charge other people with, you know, because I think especially, you know, in the fields that I work in at least, you know, with lots of activists and organizers, sometimes we're just so damn mad about what's happening in our community, right, about the power structures that we can't see past our anger, you know, that we get on our own self-righteous soapboxes and high horses, you know, and we don't do that really critical deep work in ourselves to ask ourselves if we're willing to be changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we willing to change the way that we think because other people are asking us to? Are we willing to have our spirits and our souls transformed by the work that we do, by the community work that we do? I think it's really crucial. You know, I think for me, I don't know that I would still be doing work that I'm doing, you know, without that critical lesson, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that the folks that I know that have been doing this type of work for 30, 40, 50 years, you know, it is one of the key tenets that they uphold is that willingness to be able to move ourselves to a place where we're willing to consider new thoughts, ideas, and actions, and to be in community with folks.
That brings me to another question, Hermelinda. You're going to be serving Monday as moderator of a panel discussion on Harriet Tubman Day at the Lucy F. Sims Center here in Harrisonburg.
Mm-hmm.
And this is quite interesting from the standpoint that there will be a little gender indifference, but as moderator, I know you can navigate through that. Do you have any plans or strategy how you plan to do that? You have two white males and two African-American males, and, of course, there will be audience participation, but we're glad to see you in that role. Next year we can work in terms of more inclusiveness in terms of the panelists, but you're in the hot seat, so how can you navigate through that?
Mm-hmm. Are you asking as an individual?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, it's
moderator.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm always, like, I feel like I talk about it a lot. I've been really grateful to have some pretty strong mentors. Almost all of those mentors have been really fierce, amazing Southern queer women of color across the age spectrum.
You're talking about a subject that's very rarely discussed in America today.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, you know, it's just a group of fierce women who have faced marginalization and oppression, not just from one thing, but about multiple things, right? You know, they're women of color. One, they're women. Two, they're people of color. Three, they're queer. Four, most of them are coming from low-income and working-class backgrounds, right? And so when you start talking to these women, yes, they are strong and are very resilient and have been resistant and have survived some, you know, crazy things in their lives. But, you know, at the same time, I think that we too often are quick to say, oh, those women are just strong women, right?
Mm.
They just survive. That's what they do. We don't talk about the structures and the systems that our communities have put into place to make sure that we survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a happy accident that, you know, that this group of people is my mentors, right? It was a constructed infrastructure and leadership building of people because we weren't willing to leave our folks behind, right, because we think our people are important. So, you know, I carry them with me always, you know, in the work that I do, whether I'm moderating a panel or facilitating a group of folks. And so I walk into space being very aware of my stature as a person physically, right, my personality, my identity, and how that may or may not physically come across, right? And so my strategies, I think, you know, will be to, like, one, have relationships with all of the folks on that panel, to ask a couple of key targeted questions, and also to make sure that when I'm asking questions of the audience, right, or pulling the audience into the dialogue and the discussion, that I'm making sure that both the audience and the folks on the panel are engaged in these issues and talking about all the nuances across identity. That's what I can bring to that space with the identity that I carry.
All right. Thank you very much. We got about 30 seconds left. Stan, you want to take us away? Thank you so much, Hermelinda.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to be able to dialogue about the wonders of culture and to engage in cultural conversation. And we like to thank Finding You for being there, for helping the cultures to facilitate living reality.
All right, there you have it. We will be in Harrisonburg on Friday at 1 p.m. at the Harriet Tubman Center for our first diversity discussion.
All of the bad feelings have
been healed. Be good, be positive, be strong, and most of all, believe in yourself and be good to other people. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.